We're holding on page Choftes in Chagiga, about the middle of the page, Choshech Onan Va'arofel, almost the end of Oisches. We've been learning about the seven heavens, where Shlokish had said there were seven levels of Shemayim, and he had gone through and explained what each of them is named, what its function is, where we see in the Pasuk that that particular name is used as a name of Shemayim, and so on and so forth. And we finally got to Aravos, which was the seventh and highest one, and we said there were a lot of things over there, including we said that then you have the Kisei HaKavod is there, and then Hashem is above that. So the Gemara continues, V'choshech onan va'arofel makifin. Then surrounding Hashem, so to speak, is darkness and cloud and thick cloud, representing obviously the various things that no matter what, as much as we can talk about Hashem and as much as we can talk about Ma'aseh Bereishis and Ma'aseh Merkava over there, there's a point beyond which we can't understand. Shenema, Yoshes Choshech Sisrei V'Goymer, as the Pasuk says, Hashem makes darkness to be his hiding place, so to speak. So the question is, how could there be darkness in front of Hashem? You have another pasuk that describing Hashem metaphorically. Daniel is praising Hashem. This is when Nebuchadnezzar had his dream, and none of his wise men even knew what the dream was, let alone how to interpret it. And then Hashem told the whole thing to Daniel. So Daniel says a long tefillah over there, thanking Hashem for telling him the secret. And he praises Hashem that Hashem, Hashem reveals profound and hidden things. Yoda Mava Hashoifa, Hashem knows what's in the darkness. And light abides with Hashem. So we see that just the opposite. So to speak, where Hashem is can be described as light, not dark. The answer is like Hasha, Habibati Gavoi, Habibati Baroi. Depends whether you're talking about the inner chambers or the outer chambers. In the inner chambers, then you have light. In the outer chambers, you have darkness. Earlier in the Masechta, actually, the Gemara had made a similar, there was a similar distinction as far as that it said that the one pasuk says, Oiz v'chedva b'mkoymo, that there's happiness in Hashem's place, but another pasuk describes Hashem, so to speak, crying in secret over the Churban, and the Gemara gave the same answer over there, that there's a difference between Bati Gavoi and Bati Baroi, meaning, in other words, there's Atzmus and Mahus, and then there's a level of, then there's the levels of all the course that we're able to, in some way, perceive. So in particular, in Chassidus, it talks about the darkness that it talks about over here, which is in Bati Baroi, in the outer chambers, refers to Keser. It's called dark relative to the relative to the lower worlds, in the sense they can't perceive the lower Nivroim are not able to perceive even what Keser is from their point of view. It's Ayin, it's nothingness, and therefore, so from their point of view, it can be described as darkness when really, it were really, really the light from which they all come. So then we're saying, but at an even higher level, it's not even dark; it's light. Okay, continues the Gemara. V'omer Rabbi Achba Yaakov, oid Now we've so we mentioned the seven heavens, which we can talk about, but v'omer Rabbi Achba Yaakov. There's actually another rakia, another heaven above the heads of the chayis. Shenemar, as in Yechezkel's vision of the Merkava, udmusa rakia. I saw a vision that above the heads of the chayis there was a sky, a heaven. So that's an eighth one, really. Ad kan yeshlacharushus, and up until that point, you have permission to speak about all of that. Up until that point is included in what we can perceive and what we can understand, at least on some level, and therefore we can talk about it. Above that, in particular, in the Psukim after that, Yechezkel goes on to describe, the Gemara is going to discuss these Psukim soon, but afterwards the Pasuk describes that above that Rakia is the Kisei HaKavod, and above that, on the Kisei HaKavod, is, so to speak, Ha'odim al HaKisei, the figure of a man that that Yechezkel sees on the throne, that already you can't speak about that anymore. Shekein kosev b'sefer ben sira, as it in fact it says in Sefer ben sira, we've talked about before, Sefer ben sira is a book from the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash. It's brought that the author ben sira was a grandson of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Anyway, it's a book. He was a yid. He was a poetic and smart yid. Parts of the book are written in the style of parts of Tanakh, in particular like Mishlei. The Gemara here and there talks about Ben Sira, sometimes quotes from it, like it does here, discusses in Sanhedrin. On the other hand, whether you're allowed to learn it or not, at times there was concern that people might mistake it for one of the Kisvei HaKodesh, or the Gemara mentions there were certain things in it that are silly and we shouldn't be learning. Anyway, it wasn't included in the Kisvei HaKodesh because it wasn't written with Ruach HaKodesh. Eventually, the Lashon Kodesh original of it was lost, and for a long time, all they had was a Greek translation. Eventually, in the Cairo Gniza, they found many parts of it in Lashon Kodesh. Anyway, the Gemara quotes it here and there. And in that Gemara in Sanhedrin, after the Gemara says, you're not supposed to learn it, Rabbi Yosef says, but there you have Mili Malyasa debay. There are the positive things in it, the good things in it. You can, by all means, learn in Darshan. And the Gemara quotes them here and there throughout Shas. Anyway, it says in Sefer Ben Sira, in the things that are too wondrous and separated from you, that Hashem doesn't want to reveal to you, Al Tidrash, don't delve into them to try to find out what they are. And in the things that are concealed from you, Al Tachkar, don't try to analyze them. But Masha Hosheisa Hisbonin, look into what it is that you're allowed to. Ein Lacha Esek Benistaris, you have no business with hidden things beyond that. So why all the extra expressions? Maharsha says we had three things that it mentioned in the Mishnah that there are restrictions on teaching in public. We had Arayas, which we had a discussion of what it meant exactly as far as Arayas, and Maharsha explained that was one aspect of Sisrei Torah, the Kabbalistic secrets behind why it is that various Arayas are aser, where those can easily be misinterpreted. Then you have, we said Maisa Bereshis, and then we had Maisa Merkava. So therefore he's using a triple expression, b'mufla memchal tidrash, or b'mechusa memchal tachter, b'masho hushesa, and ein mecha isek menestaris. In the middle, he has the b'masho hushesa esbonin, meaning Hashem allowed you to look into the natural world, by all means, go and delve into that and try to understand it as much as possible, but restrict yourself when it comes to those various aspects of Sisrei Torah. Okay. And the Gemara continues. So now that we talked about all the levels of Shemayim, and we said altogether there are seven, and then there's the eighth one above the Chayis HaKodesh. So Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yechanan Zakkai, Mat Shuva Heshivatu Basko Lo'usa Rosha. What was the answer that a Basko gave to that Rosha, namely Nebuchadnezzar, B'Shasha Omer, when he said, as the Pasuk depicts him, as saying, El Al Bomasei Ov, I will climb up, I will go up onto the heights of the clouds, Edamela Elyon, I will be akin, I will be like the high one. So Nebuchadnezzar figured that he could go up to Shemayim and be like Hashem. Adam Elyon, of course, has a very positive aspect of it. A person should try to be in many ways like Hashem. We actually say the name Adam comes from Adam Elyon, but Nebuchadnezzar was taking it in a negative way that he wanted to be like a god. So what answer did a Basko give him? Yotza Basko v'omraloy, a Basko came out and announced and said, Rosha ben Rosha, ben b'noi shal nimrod Rosha. You're a Rosha, you're the son of a Rosha, you're a descendant of Nimrod HaRosha. Now, it doesn't literally mean, first of all, so Tosfos says he wasn't literally a descendant of Nimrod. Nimrod was descended from Cush. Nebuchadnezzar was the king of Babel, who was descended, who the people of Babel were descended from, where Tosfos just says we don't find that he was from the descendants of Cush. In fact, there are Mephoshim who point out that the nation of Bavel, the Kastim, are descended from Shem. They're descended from Arpachshad, or later on from Kesed, one of the sons of Nachar. So he's Bechlal not related at all to Nimrod. So Tosfos says the Baskel is calling him a descendant of Nimrod in the sense he was very much like him. They both ruled in Shinar, which is Bavel. They both attacked the Jewish people, Nimrod, Avraham, and Nebuchadnezzar, the Jewish people collectively. And Maharsha adds another point as well. Nimrod was the ringleader of the Tower of Babel to rebel against Hashem, to go up. One of the reasons they built the Tower of Babel was they figured we're going to go up to heaven and wage war against Hashem. Well, that's exactly what Nimrod is trying to do. That's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar is trying to do over here. So therefore, also, he can be also seen as a spiritual descendant of Nimrod. Anyway. So he's Nimrod HaRosha. Why was he called that? Shehimrod is called Olam Kulay Olav Malchusay, that during his reign, he made the entire world rebel against Hashem. Now, the Gemara doesn't want to say that he made the entire world rebel against Hashem openly. That would be a very disgraceful thing. So instead, the Gemara uses a euphemism, Olav. He made him rebel against him. But we understand that it means he made him rebel against Hashem. Anyway, the Baskel says, I want you to consider, how much does a person live? Shivim Shana. On average, a person lives 70 years. The big vodos, if he's extra strong, shmonim shon. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, you made Shneisenu Bahem Shim Shanav and verse 20 Shanav Abraham. Now, mind you, Nebuchadnezzar himself, Tosfos pointed out, lived a lot longer than that. Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that Nebuchadnezzar was one of the survivors of Sanhedrin's army, and that was well over 100 years before the Churban Bayis Rishon. So, he lived for 20 odd years, 26 years after the Churban. So obviously he lived a lot more than 70 or 80, but the point is still valid. No matter how long he lives, it's not going to even begin to compare to the figures that the Gemara is going to give him. Anyway, so I want you to consider, says the Bas Kol to Nebuchadnezzar, just to go from earth to the first heaven would be a 500 years walk. We talked about before, earlier in the sugya, Tosfos had brought where we get this Tov Kuf Shana, we get it from the milui of the Shem Shin Dalad Yud, which makes that the world has a limit, that the world is a Baal Gavul, the milui of the letters of Shin and of Dalad and of Yud adds up to 500. Anyway, so the distance to that first Rakiya is 500 years. The thickness of the first heaven is another 500 years. And you have an equal distance between each Rakiya and the next. So far, just to get above the seven Rakiyim, then you have the seven times 500 plus the spaces between them. Tosfos actually gets into a long discussion over here, a long, interesting discussion based on a piyut of Rabbi Elazar HaKalu. We know the famous Rabbi Elazar HaKalu, who wrote many of the piyutim that we say different times. They're coming up now, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Many of the piyutim that we say in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, davening, come from him. A number of the other piyutim that we say during the year also, Tfilas Tal and Tfilas Geshem, come from him. A couple of the Hoshinus, a lot of the Kinnis, etc. It was a very prolific Python. Anyway, Tosfos brings over here that he. We'll explain in a second. So Tosfos at the end. So first, let's talk about what the main point that Tosfos wants to get out of it. That he has a piyut over there, one of the piyutim to be said in Kedusha of one of the Yom Tovim, where he mentions the distance until the Chayas HaKodesh, and he mentions the number of there 515. So Tosfos says, maybe he doesn't mean 515 based on the Gemara over here. It would seem that you're talking about 500 times 15. Maybe that's what he means. Because in other words, Tosfos says that if you consider, we're saying over here, you have the Shiva Rakiyim, you have a space below each one, a space from earth to the first Rakiya, then a space from the first to the second, from the second to the third, etc. Plus you have a space above the top one. So therefore, before you get to the legs of the Chayas, so therefore that would be 15 times 500. So Tosfos goes and discusses the ins and outs of that. However, Tosfos says the fact is, as you just said, they identify Rabbi Elazar HaKalir as the Tana Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, and therefore he's perfectly entitled to disagree with our Gemara and to give a different figure. So you don't have to be Magia, you don't have to correct his wording. He may well disagree with the Gemara over here. Somebody's shown him identify him instead with Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, a generation earlier, one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who we're going to have him later on in the sugya as well. And famously, we have him in Hilkei Avos. On the other hand, there are those who say that he lived a lot later, someplace in the times of the Goinim. So it's not so clear. But yeah, Tosfos is saying that he was a Tana, and Tosfos points out an interesting point. When you look at davening on the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Rosh Hashanah in Musaf, you have quite a number of piyutim. We say we're upad me'oz and whatever, a couple of other piyutim before we get to an asana token. The second day we have next to nothing. The second day chazaras hashatz, you have lekel orich din, and then you go straight to an asana token. What happened? Why are there no piyutim for the second day? Tosfos says that's why, because Rabbi Elazar HaKalir is none other than Rabbi Elazar b'Reb Shimon, and his times, since they were still mekadesh al pi ariyah, they usually didn't have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. They usually only had 1 day. Therefore, he wrote piyutim only for the first day. Anyway, so continue with the Baskol telling Nebuchadnezzar. By the way, there was a vote on this. There's a Musudik vote that says, what does this mean? It's 500 years to reach the first Rakiya. Besides the simple sense that the Gemara is meaning over here, it means, in other words, first of all, the Rakiya, and there's an explanation brought from the Vilna Gaon. It's printed in Shulchan Aruch as an introduction to his Pirush that says, when we say in Yalav Yavri, we have all the Lashonis, Yalav Yavri V'Yagia, those, there are seven, there are eight Lashonis over there, two of them, V'Yipokid V'Yizachar, are basically the same thing. So that represents the Shiva Rakiyim we're talking about over there, and each of them represents a level in Avoida that a person has to achieve in order to come closer to Hashem. So, like, first of all, a person has to be aware that there's Ra out there. He has to want to, well, the first one is he has to want to overcome the Ra that's there that prevents him from coming close to Hashem. He has to start working on it. He has to, et cetera. There's seven different levels that a person has to go to. So then there's a vote on that the 500 years that we're saying means if a person were to work completely b'koyach atzma, without having any siyata d'shmaya, it would take him 500 years just to reach that first level. So that's it. We say, you know, we have a famous expression that the Eibishter says, "Pischuli Pesach Chodesh Shalmachat." Open up for me a little opening the size of a needle, of a point of a needle. I'll make for you a gigantic opening. That's what it means. A person takes even that first step towards that 500 years, then the Eibishter helps him the rest of the way. But if it weren't for that, it would take him 500 years even just to reach that first level of wanting to be able to fight off the Ra.
The eye, yeah.
I think the point of a needle, but whatever. Okay, onward. So you have so far 15 times 500. L'mayla mehen chayis hakodesh. Then above them you have the chayis hakodesh. Now, the ragle achayis keneged kolam. Just the feet, meaning the hooves of the chayis, the chayis hakodesh, the thickness of their hooves, is equal to everything we said so far. You have 15 times 500 years. So we're talking so far a distance of 7,500 years journey from earth just to reach the feet of the chayis, and then the feet themselves are another 7,500. The Alter Rebbe mentions this in Tanya. What it means is Beruchnius is. So we have all over the place. We have the concept of the Eser Sfiris on one level and then the next level. And we always have, for example, we have Malchus of Atzilus becomes Keser of Bria, and Malchus of Bria becomes Keser of Yetzira, and so forth. And Keser includes with it everything that's going to come from below that. So in that sense, we're saying over here Ragle Achayis Keneged Kulon. In the sense, once you've finally gotten through all the Shiver Akiyim, which represents the lower Olamus, now you come to a higher Olam, and then at that point, you're at the feet, you're only dealing with Malchus, and Malchus over there incorporates within it all of the, everything that's in all the worlds below it, because that's how it is. That's a Malchus of one level unfolding into Keser, Chochma, Bina, et cetera, of the next.
All these numbers, big numbers, it's just a metaphor to show how really far away it is, right?
Right. So on one level, it's a metaphor. On one level, we're saying it's a reality. That's why Hashem is telling them, that's why the Baskel is telling the Chanetzer, there's no way that you can possibly think that you could go above the heavens and be anything like Hashem. You're not even in a human lifetime. You're not even going to reach the first heaven, much less the other ones. But yeah, then it has all these various symbolic meanings as well, yeah.
How is it the reality? Is it got it from the Baskel?
That's what we're saying, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So the Karsule Achayas Kineged Kolon. Then we continue looking at the Chayas. Now the Chayas HaKodesh, the way the Gemara is describing it over here, their legs are more like the legs of animals than like people. A human leg has two major parts. You have the upper, you have the thigh bone, and then you have the shin bone. An animal's leg has three parts. You have the upper part corresponding to our thigh. You have the next lower part corresponding to our shin, and then you have a part below that. Kosher animals at least basically walk on tiptoe. Their hooves are the equivalent of our fingernails. So they have a third bone, which is called in Gemara terminology, which corresponds anatomically to our palm of our hand or our sole of our foot. So that's the Karsule Achayis. So after you have, so your Ragle Achayis then, or the hooves of the Chayis, then you have Karsule Achayis, Keneged Kulam. Actually, no, before that, even Karsule Achayis, Rashi says, is their ankles, is Keneged Kulam. Those are equal to everything we said so far. So that could mean equal to another 7,500 years, or it could mean even equal to everything plus the hooves that we said so far, in which case we're talking about even more. The shoik achayis keneged kolon. Then you get to the shoik, which is the lower part of the leg. That's keneged all of them. Or rechove achayis. You have the rechove, which is the middle bone, is keneged kolon. Yavke achayis keneged kolon. The thigh bones of the chayis are equal to everything we said so far. The guf achayis keneged kolon. The guf of each one of the chayis is equal to everything we said so far. But sabre achayis keneged kolon. Then their necks are equal to everything so far. The rosh achayis keneged kolon. Their heads are also equal to everything so far. The kane achayis keneged kolon, and their horns. In particular, Marshall says we know the chayis hakodesh are described by Yechezkel as having four faces. Actually, they have four times four faces, the way Rashi explains it on the pasuk over there, because each face is multiplied, but whatever. Among the faces is Pnei Shur, is the face of an ox. Well, an oxen have horns. Therefore, the Chayas HaKodesh have horns. So, and their horns are Keneged Kulam. So far, you're already talking about astronomically large numbers. Above the Chayes HaKodesh comes the Kisei HaKavod. The Ragle Kisei HaKavod connected pull on, and just the legs of the Kisei HaKavod are equal to everything that we said so far. The Kisei HaKavod connected pull on. The Kisei HaKavod itself is equal to everything we said so far. And then only once you get to that level, Melech Keil Chai V'Kayim Rom V'Nisa Sheikhan Aleim, then the Eivishter alone, the living and existing Hashem, the high exalted one, dwells on that. So it's astronomically far, even Parshat in Gashmiastika terms, the Ata Amarta Ela Abomase Avogam, and you, Nebuchadnezzar, priding yourself that you're going to go just on top of the clouds and you think you're going to be like Hashem. So no, in fact, the Pasuk says on the contrary. Achav she'ol turad, as the pasuk continues there in Yeshaya, on the contrary, you'll be thrown down, you'll be lowered down into she'ol, which means the grave, and it also means Gehenim, el yarkasei bur, to the uttermost depths of the pit. So you think you're going to go as high as possible, just the opposite, you're going to be dragged down as low as possible. In fact, Marsha points out, we know that Nebuchadnezzar, when he died, they weren't sure that he's really dead yet, because after all, he had disappeared for 7 years, or however long it was, he had become an animal over there, you have the whole story in Sefer Daniel, and he did, and then when he finally came, so they thought he was dead, his son Evel Merodach had taken over, and then when Nebuchadnezzar came back, he had Evel Merodach thrown in jail. So now when Nebuchadnezzar finally does drop dead, nobody believes he's really dead. And they actually have to schlep his body out of the grave and parade it around so everybody could really be convinced that he's dead. So Maharsha says that's what the pasuk means over here. El yarkasei bur. You're not even going to be in the pit itself, in a burial pit. You're actually going to be el yarkasei by the edges of the pit because you're going to be schlepped out of your grave. So in short, in other words, we see from this basko how tremendously far you would have to go, both the Gashmias and Beruchnias, to even reach anywhere near higher levels of Olamus, let alone to reach Atzmus and Mohus. And yet again, the point is that and still, as the Gemara elsewhere mentions, but Makom Shata Motzei Gdulase, where you find the Eibishter's greatness, Shamata Motzei in the Sanusa, you find the Eibishter's humility, that Kavyachol Hashem condescends to come all the way down and be with us, especially now, Elul Melech Masadeh, even though on the face of it, it's so infinitely, almost infinitely far, but still the Eibishter is with us because he chooses to be. Okay. The Mishnah had said, "V'loy b'merkava b'yochid." Now, the Mishnah had said, so far you had Sisrei Arayas, you have the secrets behind Arayas that you have to be careful how many people you teach them to at a time. The Mishnah had said you can teach them to two people at a time, but not three. Then we had Maisa Bereshis that you can teach to one at a time, but not two. And then V'loy b'merkava b'yochid. And then the Mishnah had said that you can't teach Maisa Merkava to an individual unless. The Mishnah had said, unless he's a chacham u'mevin midaita, unless he's wise and can understand on his own, namely, you tell him the basics and he can deduce the rest from that. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabchia, avol moisrin loy roshei prakim. Now, what you can do is that you can teach him roshei prakim, you can teach him the chapter headings, meaning the basic information, as the Gemara is going to go on to say later. There is machlokas we're showing him within that. Does the Mishnah mean that you can teach that a regular Talmud you can't teach the full thing, but you can teach him Roshei Prakim, and then if he understands the rest on his own, then good. Whereas a Chacham or Mevin Midaita, you can teach him the whole thing, or the Rambam learns and in Moreh Nevuchim, he says that no, what it means is a regular Talmud you can't teach at all, not even Roshei Prakim. Even a Chacham or Mevin Midaita, all you can teach him is Roshei Prakim. You can teach him the chapter heading, the basic, and hope that he deduces that he's a Chacham or Mevin Midaita enough to understand the rest himself. That's how the Rambam. Okay. For Amr Abchiyo or Amr Abzera, Ein Moisrin Roshei Prakim Ela La'av Beis Din. You can give even these Roshei Prakim, you can give over only to an Av Beis Din, or the Misha Liba Doyeg Bekirboi, and or to somebody whose heart worries within him, meaning in other words that he's a serious minded person and he's not prone to Kalos Rosh. Marsha points out, by the way, we don't necessarily mean somebody who actually serves as an Av Beis Din. Marsha learns what it means is if he's a Chacham or Mevin Midaitai, then even if he's not actually serving as an Av Beis Din, then you are allowed to. What the Gemara means over here is, according to Marsha, is if the guy is not a Chacham or Mevin Midaitai, however, he is a serving Av Beis Din, then that alone, by virtue of that position that he's holding, is reason enough that you can teach him at least Rosh Hashanah. On the other hand, Ion Yaakov says maybe not. Maybe it doesn't mean an actual, because the reason is, Maharshal says, because further on, the Gemara is going to talk about how Rabbi Yochanan, for example, offered to teach his Talmud, Rabbi Elazar, Maisa Merkava, and we never find that Rabbi Elazar served as an Av Beis Din. So on the other hand, so that's what makes Marashal say that it means it's one or the other. Either that he's a Chocham or maybe Midaitai, or that he's serving as an Av Beis Din. On the other hand, Iyun Yaakov counters maybe when we say an Av Beis Din, over here we mean somebody who's worthy of being appointed an Av Beis Din, who is of the caliber, who has the knowledge of Torah and all the other good midas, that he's worthy of being appointed one, even if he's actually not actually serving in such a position. Anyway, Ikadamli, then the Gemara says another version is Vahu Shaliba Daig Bakirba. According to the first version, it's one or the other. Either he's an Av Beis Din or he's Liba Daig Bakirba. According to the second version, he has to have both qualities in order for you to be able to teach him Maisa Merkava. Or at least to teach him the Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Ami, Ein Moisrin Sisrei Torah, Elo Mishi Yesh Behei Dvarim. You can't give over secrets of Torah, including Maisa Merkava, only to somebody who has the following five qualities, as the pasuk lists them: sar chamishim unesuponim yoyetz v'chacham haroshim unevoin lachash. So further on in the sugya, actually, the Gemara is going to define each one of these more precisely. The simple meaning is sar chamishim would be somebody who's worthy of being a captain over 50 people. Unesuponim means that he's a distinguished person that people look up to him. Yoyetz, he's an advisor. V'chacham haroshim, he's a wise person regarding secrets. Unevoin lachash, and he's able to understand whispered things. That's the simple meaning, but later on the Gemara is going to give a different spin on several of them. Yeshaya mentions it in connection with, he says that there's going to come a time when such people are going to be absent from Yerushalayim. We'll talk about it later on in the Sugya. Anyway, so Rav Ami is saying a person has to have these five qualities in order for you to give over Sisrei Torah to him. It shows, by the way, the difference that, you know, now we have Sisrei Torah are publicized more widely, and ultimately, of course, it goes back to the Arizal saying mitzvah legala mutter, mitzvah legala seresa chachma, and of course, we have the famous marshal of the Alter Rebbe about the precious stone in the king's crown, where now Sisrei Torah are being publicized everywhere, and even like in that story over there, sometimes they end up in the street, abi that one drop gets into the mouth of the Ben HaMelech and revives. Anyway. But Amar Rav Ami, in this connection, since Rav Ami mentioned the criteria that a person needs to have for you to give over Sisrei Torah to him, so Rav Ami mentions, incidentally, another thing. Ein Moisrin Divrei Torah La'Ovid Kechavi. You're not allowed to give over words of Torah to a goy. Shenema, the pasuk says, Magid Dvarav LeYaakov. Hashem tells his words to Yaakov, Chuk of Mishpat of Yisrael. He tells his chukim and mishpatim to the Jewish people, and he continues, Loi osachein l'chogoy. Hashem has not done such a thing for any other nation, or mishpatim, bal yadom, and they don't know Hashem's mishpatim. So therefore, so we see from that you can't teach Torah to an Ovid Kechavi. Now, there was an enormous amount of discussion about that among Rishonim and Achronim. Tosfos, first of all, brings up the point that in any case, the Gemara elsewhere says that a goy who's oisek b'Torah is chayev misa. Fine, but still, so automatically, then you're not allowed to teach in Torah. So Tosfos discusses a couple of possible answers. First of all, that before Matan Torah, you would be allowed to teach them Shevah Mitzvos Bnei Noach. Now, based on this, we're saying that after Matan Torah, you can't even do that. Now, obviously, when the Rebbe came out with the campaign about Shevah Mitzvos, that's not according to this Tosfos. That's based on the Rambam that says that Mitzvah Lokuf Koboi Olam. We have to get them to keep. Then Tosfos brings another answer that it means even, let's say, there's another goy who's ready to teach him. Now, we have a concept of lifnei iver, and that applies to a goy as well. The Gemara talks about in Avodah Zarah, there's a whole sugya about it, that, for example, you're not allowed to do something to enable a goy to worship Avodah Zarah, to do something for Avodah Zarah that he otherwise might not have been able to do. However, if there's somebody else equally available, let's say, for example, the Gemara discusses over there, let's say you're going to sell something to him that he could use for his religious rituals, and he could equally well buy the same thing from somebody else, then it's not necessarily also to sell it to him. It's called chad evra denara. It's called like as if you're all on one side of a river, and he could equally well get the thing from you as from somebody else. So here, Tosfos says, let's say you have somebody else who's available to teach him. So you don't have nevertheless, it's still also to teach him on the grounds of this Magid Dvar of the Yaakov. Now, Marsha gives a different explanation. Marsha explains that no, of course you have to teach the goyim the basic laws that they need to know, including Shevah Mitzvos Bnei Noach. And mind you, by the way, there's an interesting discussion: what exactly is included? We know that one of those Shevah Mitzvos Bnei Noach is dini. What exactly is included in dini? The Rambam holds that it just means the basics. They have to set up courts of law to judge people who violate the other six. The Ramban, on the other hand, holds that dinim, as part of the Sheva Mitzvos Menenoyach, includes basically the whole Choshen Mishpat, pretty much. So according to the Ramban, if we hold that you're supposed to teach them Sheva Mitzvos Menenoyach, then according to the Ramban, you would basically have to teach them the whole Choshen Mishpat, pretty much. So Marsha says that we're talking about over here, since the context of the Gemara over here is talking about Sisrei Torah, then that's what it means over here. You can't teach, by all means, teach the Goyim Sheva Mitzvos, but don't teach them the deeper reasons behind them. That's off limits to them. There was a huge amount of other discussion and many, many other opinions of Rishonim and Achronim on the subject. The Meiri says that it only applies only to Ovda Avodah Zarah, and he says that nowadays, in general, the Goyim are not. He holds famously that the Christians are not considered Ovda Avodah Zarah. They're just considered that they're worshipping B'shittuf. And so he holds it would be mutter. There's a tshuva from the Rambam, actually, where somebody asked him about teaching Torah to Goyim, and the Rambam, at least as far as Torah Shebichsav, in fact, there are opinions that B'chlal, this Gemara, is not referring to Torah Shebichsav, only Torah Shebal Peh. So somebody asked the Rambam about that. He said there's actually a difference in that regard, he said, between Christians and Muslims. If you teach a Christian Torah Shebichsav, so what happens? They have the same Torah Shebichsav as we do. They have it translated into their languages, and they have misinterpretations in it, but it's still the same thing. So you teach them, for example, this pasuk says such and such. They may say, you know what? I realize now, I thought all this time, I thought this pasuk is saying such and such, and now I realize it's been misinterpreted to me by my galoch. Good. On the other hand, the Muslims, they don't have, what they did is they took parts of our Torah and incorporated it into their Quran. But it's all mixed up compared to the way we have it. To give a real funny example, they have in the Quran where Haman is the one advising Paro to destroy the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. So obviously he mixed up Haman and Bilam and mixed up Paro and Achashverosh. Anyway, so that I'm right, and it's true, but you tell a Muslim then that's not how it is. It wasn't Paro, it was Achashverosh. The guy's gonna say, no, you're wrong, our thing has it correct, and he's not gonna accept it from you anyway.
Was the one that was in the
Akedah. Yeah, they have that. Yishmael was the one in the Akedah. Yeah. Worth mentioning in that connection, by the way, a cute vote from a mayor, Kahana Hayad. He says, you know, like this, you have before the Akedah, Hashem tells Avram, Kachnos, Binchos, Yechidcha, Asher Havta, As Yitzchak, and Rashi says over there, it's a whole series of questions and answers, Kachnos, Bincha, but I have two children, As Yechidcha, each one is a Yochid to his mother. So I once heard a vote from a mayor Kahana that said, you know what, you see, that's not so good to ask too many questions. If he had just said, okay, you mean Yishmael, and they would have taken Yishmael, and that would have been the end of him. Anyway, like I said, there are a lot of other opinions on the subject of what exactly it is you are and aren't allowed to teach to Goyim. There's also, there's, for example, a number of Trubas from Moshe Feinstein on the subject. For example, if you're going to give a public class in Torah and Goyim are going to come to attend, or nowadays, if classes all over the place on the internet and Goyim can listen to them on YouTube just as much as Yidden can, he says that would be allowed because you're teaching it for Yidden. It's not your problem if some random Goy pays attention to it as well. And there's a huge amount of discussion about all the ins and outs and what heterim there are. Okay, the Gemara continues. So Rabbi Yochanan offers his Talmud, Rabbi Lazar's main Rebbe was Rabbi Yochanan. He says, come, let me teach you Maisa Merkava. So Rabbi Lazar says, Akati like Kashon. I'm not old enough for it yet. Later on, the Gemara explains that when Rabbi Ami had said that one of the criteria you need is Sar Chamishim, later on, the Gemara explains it means somebody who's at least 50 years old. And Rabbi Lazar wasn't that age yet. There's a popular idea that you can find here and there that you're not supposed to learn Kabbalah till 40. Where that comes from is not so clear. Here the Gemara is saying 50. Anyway, Kiddakash, by the time Rabbi Lazar was old enough, Noch Nafshe did Rabbi Yochanan, and then Rabbi Yochanan passed away. So now, after Rabbi Yochanan had passed away and Rabbi Asi took over as one of the Rosh Yeshiva, Omalei Rabbi Asi Torah Gamelcha Maisa Merkav. So Rabbi Asi offered him to teach him. So Rabbi Elazar says, no, Izakoy, if I'd had the schus, Gemirnim Rabbi Yochanan Rabbach, then I would have been able to learn it from your Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, so to speak, like your second best. Obviously, the fact that it came out that way, Milamayla, that Rabbi Yochanan passed away before I reached the age, shows that Milamayla, it's not meant that I should learn this. Marsha, by the way, says, criticizes based on this. He says, Mekan Tshuva, he says, from here you have a refutation of people in our generation. The Marsha is talking about 400 years ago. They spend their whole life learning Kabbalah, even when they're younger. And he says, you see from this Gemara and from the following stories in the Gemara that the Chachamim would try to hold themselves back from it until they felt they're really worthy. Marsha's times is the early times after the Arizal, who had said mitzvah galus zois hachochma. So those people who were learning it even in their youth may have been basing themselves on the Arizal and that, but Marsha apparently didn't like the idea. The Gemara tells us, so Rabbi Yosef have a gomim maisa merkava, the sovid de pumpadisa have a ton of maisa bereshis. Rabbi Yosef was familiar with, he knew all the ins and outs of maisa merkava, the elders of pumpadisa, which elsewhere the Gemara identifies them as Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Eina, were from have a ton of maisa bereshis. They were familiar with maisa bereshis. Rashi explains that both of these are collections of braises. So Rabbi Yosef knew thoroughly the braises that talk about Maisa Merkava and then analyze it in detail, and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Eina were familiar with the ones on Maisa Bereshis. Omrulei, so they asked him one time, Ligmur on my Maisa Merkava. Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef, teach us Maisa Merkava. Omrulei, so he answers them, Aga Martinan Atun Maisa Bereshis. First, you teach me everything you have to know about Maisa Bereshis. Agmarua, so they taught it. Bossed the Gamrua after they had taught it to him. Omru li gamran ma, maisa merkava. Okay, so now you keep your end of the deal and teach us maisa merkava. Omalahu, he tells them, no, Taneinu b'hu, about maisa merkava, which is very deep secrets of Kabbalah, we learn about them, as the Pasuk says, dvash v'chol of tachas l'shonech, honey and milk should be under your tongue, which means dvarim shem misukim midvash. Things of Torah that are sweeter than honey, b'chol, and sweeter than milk, you tachas l'shoncha, should remain under your tongue, and they shouldn't be revealed. So they were proposing, Marsha says, they were proposing, given that the Mishnah says you can't teach them to two people together, they were asking him to teach them individually to each one of them. But he's telling them this. He tells them that you have the beginning of that pasuk in Shir HaShirim begins, Neufes titoifnes sifsesayach kala, your lips, O kala, drip with sweetness. So that means, in other words, when it comes to droshes by the kala, like yachi kala, by all means, your tongue should drip, your mouth should, your lips should drip with sweetness of Torah. But when it comes with these things, dvash v'chol of tachas l'shoncha, then they should be kept hidden. So in other words, I don't feel that you're worthy of it. So Alderach, like you'd almost like trick them into teaching them the Maisa Bereshis, somewhat like you have the story with the Alter Rebbe and Rabbi Avraham HaMalach, where the Alter Rebbe would turn back the clock so he'd learn more Chassidus with him. Rabbi Bahu, Amar Mehacha. Rabbi Bahu says there's a different pasuk that tells us a source for this concept that you should be careful who you teach Maisa Merkava to. The pasuk is Kvosim Lul Voshecha. Literally, it means sheep will be for your clothing. In other words, the wool from the sheep will serve for your clothing. What we're darshaning, I'll take a kvosim, ala kvushim. Don't read kvosim, but kvushim, the hidden things. The secrets of the world, you tachas l'boshecha, should remain under your clothing and should not be revealed. So Rabbi Yosef figured that Rabbi Eina and Rabbi Sava are not yet on the level to be learned. Marsha explains also, if you look at the context of that pasuk in Mishlei, you can find the previous psukim are hinting at the idea that you should have talmidim, and you should be sure to teach your talmidim very well. But on the other hand, then there's kvasim lul b'shecha, there are things that you have to be wary of teaching your talmidim. So we'll continue tomorrow with what happened between them. Rez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogola. Let's see, Vav Elo. The Maharil brings that a person should do tshuva every day. Not the Maharil, the brother of the Alter Rebbe, but the Maharil, the Rishon, says every day a person should do tshuva because the Moshe Mashiach, people will not be accepted in tshuva. Al derech, like we won't accept Gerim at that time, because at that time we can't be sure that a person is going to be misgayer out of love of Hashem. It's more likely he wants to join in the goodness of the Jewish people. Now, since we're expecting the Yeshua every day, so if a person doesn't do tshuva, and then Mashiach comes all of a sudden, then he hasn't done tshuva, and Chas V'Shalom is going to remain with his sins. The Maharil writes this point. So therefore, the Rebbe brings in a sicha. So you see, you can have some people take the view, shuv yamecha lefnei misasach, as it says in Pirkei Avos, I might die tomorrow, and therefore I better do tshuva today. Better to do, like Maharil says, be doing tshuva today because Mashiach is going to come. Okay, continuing on halachas of what you're allowed and not allowed to wear outdoors on Shabbos. We talked about the other day about, for example, if you have an earache and you have a discharge from your ear, so you're putting in a wad of cotton in there, that you're allowed to do on Shabbos as long as you tie it in place. On the other hand, for example, you have, let's say, a woman going out on Shabbos with something stuck in over there so that her clothes don't get dirty from Nida, then that would be a problem unless it's a malbush gum. If she's doing it to prevent herself from tsar, then that would be allowed. So what that means in terms of the kinds of things they use nowadays, I think the typical ones they use nowadays are stuck with adhesive or whatever to the clothing. So l'chora, maybe it's less of a problem, but I'm not quite sure about that. Okay.